What's going on? It's the Film Drunk Frogcast. Catchphrase, catchphrase, catchphrase coming at you, not live from the Film Drunk Frog quarters in San Francisco. We got the whole crew in the house. It's me, Vince. Across from me, the grumpiest man in podcasting, Mr. Brett.
Hi, I've returned from the void womb.
He has. Future NFL Hall of Famer, Brendan.
Catchphrase, catchphrase.
Oh, it's catching on, our catchphrases. And the irregular regular, Mr. Matt Lieb.
Grocery store sushi is delicious.
That's what he's eating right now. Mm-hmm. That's how sad his life is.
I don't know if that's that sad.
Yeah.
Guess how much it cost?
$3.
$3, baby, because of the government.
Oh, is that food stamps?
Uh-huh. But until I get my
oh,
next...
Man. My, it's even sadder than I thought.
They're ending my food stamps at the end of the month.
Aw.
Because this month... Because
you got that chumrare anymore?
Yeah, because this month I made a lot of money.
Yeah.
Well, I didn't make a lot of money. I made over $1,200.
Yeah.
And they're like, all right, Mr. Fancy Pants.
You can afford a half a month of
rent. No more free grocery store sushi for you.
Yeah. So I'm doing great, though. For now, live it up.
Oh, also, it's Brett's birthday.
What? That's,
yeah, I was just in.
You were born?
Yeah, the pit of darkness. I returned to the void womb.
He went on his... Okay, I should say what's on the space docket for today before we get into that. Matt Ufford, Marine veteran, going to come on, talk about American Sniper in about 10 minutes. So that should be fun.
Yeah.
We all saw it, every single one on this podcast.
Yeah. We can all speak with authority about seeing a movie.
Yeah, and Gary from Fremont's going to call in.
And by extension, America's entire foreign policy decision-making of the last 15 years.
Mm-hmm. Fremont-centric.
Mm-hmm. But Brett, it's his birthday. That's bigger news.
It is. It's probably the biggest news.
And your wife got you...
My wife. His wife. Sorry, it's the grocery store sushi. up my game.
Yeah. Got you a gift certificate to the... Sensory deprivation tank.
Yes.
Nice. That's right.
It's how nice. How did your senses did get you deprived? Learn? Did you recharge them?
I did. It's hard to not lose focus and start like awake dreaming.
Isn't that kind of the point though?
It depends. I try and do a little meditation thing in there, but man, you just it's like exactly body temperature and
is it
you can't
easier,
tell if your eyes are open or not.
Right. That's so amazing.
Is it easier to meditate because you don't have to worry about touching your ding-dong?
Yeah, it's really helpful. But then you're like, oh my God, I can like really feel my ding-dong.
Did you get horny?
A little bit.
Did you masturbate?
No, you can't do that. It's gross.
Well,
You're supposed to remain perfectly still.
Are you supposed to be naked?
Yeah.
Do they replace the water in there?
Yeah.
Did you get like... memories of future crimes that were going to happen.
Yeah,
that's awesome.
Boner crimes.
How are you not? I don't know about you guys, but if I get naked, I get horny. Like pretty much. It's like
naked and alone, and you're already junk in hand.
Like I mean, just if anyone tells me to get naked ever, it's always like my body reads that as you're about to get fucked.
Yeah. That's kind of true. Like when you're getting a massage, even if it's not like, you know, a grody Thai massage.
Even if it's dude who's about to do it and he's like, get over there.
You're in there naked and you're kind of just like, all right, well, maybe she might just like turn me over and jerk me off.
Even if it's a dude, you're like, maybe he might.
You're all relaxed and it feels good. And you kind of hope for it, even if it's a dude.
I don't know. Just like taking off of the underwear, taking off the pants in a place that's not like your bathroom.
Oh, yeah. It's dirty.
Even in my bathroom. Everywhere like, I go.
Oh, I'm going to poop in here.
Yeah. Oh, I can't wait to take a shit. My dick's getting hard just thinking about it.
Going to make it hard to poop in my bathroom.
I'm getting naked and shit.
But yeah. So you're supposed to stay completely still. Do they sit you on a chair?
You don't have to do anything. So it's like an 8x8 room.
Okay.
It's all like plastic lined. And there's like a vault door. There's like, it's insulated. The whole thing's insulated.
And you have to be naked.
Yeah.
That's so, I don't understand.
Well, I mean, otherwise you're going to feel like shorts. You don't want to feel shorts.
Yeah, but I think I would be more comfortable and more able to focus with clothes on.
What's like the ultimate goal of sensory deprivation? What are you hoping to gain from it?
I don't know if there's anything to gain from it. It's just a nice way to sort of like... be quiet for a while. It's like it's a lot of work. Like, your brain wants to like shimmy around and be like, I'm worried about the grocery store sushi and whether that's full of little parasites.
Well, don't
gonna
say
hatch
it now. Jesus fucking Christ.
So your brain's all trying to like squirm away and worry about the parasites that are definitely in that sushi.
All right, man. Come on.
So you got to kind of like keep
maybe
an eye
the,
on it.
Maybe the hot sauce will kill them.
Oh, God.
Nah, microbes love hot sauce. They're in there with their sombreros and their little pistols.
This expired like 3 years ago, so you're probably definitely fucked.
When's the last time someone got a brain parasite from sushi?
Like, no, it's not the brain. It's the little worms that are all coiled up, and then they unfurl, and then their hooks get you in the stomach.
The crazy thing is, I'm doing
it. Hookworms.
You're floating, right? Like, it's salt water. You can't go in there with your clothes on because it'll get all salty and soggy.
Oh, you're in a tank of water?
Yeah, it's like, I don't know, like 8 inches deep of really salty water, so you float above it. And it's like the water is your body temperature and the air is super humid and about your body temperature. So if it's...
Can you fart in there? Like, what happens if you fart in there?
You'll hear it. It's like the only thing. Oh, man. Just like you hear
that'd
your...
be the best. Actually, like now I kind of want to do it just so I could fart in there. I want to eat some oatmeal soap and then just like sort of marinate in a tank of my own farts. No, because your own smart farts smell great, though.
So you're in a tank of room temperature...
No, body temperature.
Body temperature water.
Uh-huh. And it's really salty, so you float above it more than you would in like a pool or something.
Oh, you're
so
floating.
You're like suspended.
Oh, that's amazing.
Yeah, and it's totally dark. Like, you can't tell the difference between eyes open, eyes closed.
And then they actually harness your body energy to power their machines.
Mm-hmm. Ah, yeah.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
You get jacked into the Matrix.
Yeah, that's what happens.
The machines are nice.
They use you as a battery.
Yeah, they're nice machines, so you want to help them out.
That's cool. I love floating on, like, salty water.
The Matrix kind of glossed over that human battery part. I was like, wait a second.
Because it doesn't work.
Go back. I don't think that...
You got to put junk into the people, and it would be easier to just burn the junk.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It made more sense when I was...
When Morpheus was explaining it. Yeah. The way Morpheus explained it, it made a lot of sense.
Yeah. I love floating in a tank of salt. Yeah. That's like... I only did that once ever in Israel at the... What is it? The Dead Sea?
The Dead Sea, yeah.
Yeah, that was really cool. Yeah, it was nice. You just float there, and you're like, that's rad. And then you look over, you're like... I'm going to fuck that shit. But you don't.
How come? Because you're not tough enough for an Israeli.
Israelis, they want like a tougher guy. And also, like, because it's weird, because you think you're going to like a land filled with just, you know, like a feet fucking fags like that look like me, you know what I mean?
A bunch of Jack Antonoffs and
right.
John Steinbeck.
Exactly. And then you go and it's a lot of just really strong, like, who's the guy from... A lot of bear Jews, just like, like fucking Eli Roths, and they're all very handsome.
Yeah.
And you're like, oh, so I lose no matter where I go. But it was still a good time, floated in that
Got
water.
Got real salty, though, didn't
with
you?
With that boner. That, see, that the salt, that's the only thing that would make me not come is, like, worrying about
like a vampire as your garlic. Look, salt's the only thing that's gonna stop me from coming. You invite me into your house and I'm gonna squirt.
You have to like just pour salt rings around your room like you're watching for snails. Like,
so Matt Lee doesn't come in and beat off in your room.
He's just stalking around the edge, making animal noises at you.
Trying to move the salt around.
I'm going to come in your direction.
Every time I touch the salt, my dick just burns a little bit.
Oh, God, it's getting closer.
He's coming. Yeah.
Gross.
Well, how old did you turn?
How old did I turn?
How old are you now? What did you turn?
When does the becoming?
Yeah.
33. I'm 33.
33. That's a good age, man.
That's all right. Old, real old.
So, that's all Jesus was.
That's freaky. What's his name's number? Cream of Dulce Bar's number. So that's cool.
That's true.
That's reassuring.
Yeah.
Yeah. Hey.
So you got that to look forward to.
Before you were your Magic Johnson's number.
Yeah.
OJ Simpson.
Yeah.
OJ Simpson.
These are all Marcus Allen.
All numbers Marcus people Allen. Can have.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I saw one of the worst movies ever today.
Cool. Next year you'll be Shaquille O'Neal's number. Go ahead. What'd you see?
I saw Cake. With Jennifer Aniston.
Oh, is that bad? I saw a preview.
I mean, she's very brave. She's right. Very, very brave.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what it is with indie filmmakers and like the idea of grief. Like, they think someone being grief-stricken is going to somehow, like, make them deeper by association or more serious as an artist.
Didn't they already do that movie with her and Jake Gyllenhaal? And he was all, like, into Salinger. And he was like, and put upon. And he kept saying put upon. And he thought he was Catcher in the Rye, but he wasn't. He was just some jerk off at the grocery store.
I do not remember that movie at all. That was Jennifer Aniston?
Pretty sure.
I think you're crazy, though. Mm-hmm.
There's the movie where his sister gets kidnapped or something, but it's not exciting. It's all very grievy. It's called Moonlight Mile. But I don't think Jennifer Aniston was in it.
No, he was definitely a Target clerk or something, and she was a fellow Target clerk, and they fuck, maybe.
Yeah, don't remember that one.
Griefy.
Anyway, this one...
I got a home fries. Is it not home fries?
It's also... It sounds a lot like Career Opportunities, which was... what's her name? Jennifer Connelly, way back when she was like a 12. When she still is like a 12, actually. Yeah. Way back when she was like an 18-year-old 12 instead of like a 45-year-old 12, which she still is.
She's super hot.
I like her. Should IMDb Jake Gyllenhaal or Jennifer Aniston to find this?
Jennifer Aniston, because she's probably...
Either way, our listeners are going to be riveted.
Yeah. Anyway, the movie...
I could just keep eating sushi into the mic while you look.
You know how you know that grief is not an interesting emotion? Is like every movie where someone's grieving, there's a lot of fantasy sequences. It's just like... So it's obviously not that interesting to watch them walk around feeling numb. So they put in like, she's talking to a dead person. But then... It's like a boring fantasy. A lot of fantasy sequences that didn't go anywhere.
Yeah, well, in the trailer, there's a cake involved.
Ooh.
And then she like bakes a cake out of grief.
She eat the cake?
I'm like, oh, that's what it's about.
Oh, also, she has like
sound very interesting.
She has like chronic pain. She has like fibromyalgia or some shit.
What's she so take it's for like, it?
What?
Yeah, a lot of. Well,
yeah, what about what happens with the cake? What's the
nothing?
What's the end result?
Does she
bakes a cake at one point.
Does she eat the cake?
She gives it to a friend.
Is there a scene that's like grief is like a cake? It starts out raw, and then when you after a while of baking, you eat it.
It's also a circle. It's a circle.
It's also delicious.
Yeah, yeah. It's also sugary and gives you diabetes. So don't grieve.
Yeah.
The end.
Yeah, pretty much. No, but
is there that scene though?
I was trying to think of what would be my least favorite thing in the world to watch, and then someone came up with it. It's like someone who's grieving and has like chronic fatigue syndrome, so they're just like, I'm always in. Like she's just like walking
that
around.
That sounds like really uncomfortable.
Grunting and
my mental pain is manifesting itself physically.
Yeah, something like that.
Oh, that sounds shitty.
What kind of cake was it?
There was a chocolate one.
Ooh. Mm.
There was a couple cakes. Well, one was a fantasy cake. It was like a.
Oh, is that better than the chocolate cake. One?
It was white.
Ooh,
with
I
yellow
like it.
Candles on it.
Oh.
We like cake surprisingly a lot.
Fantasy cake's my favorite.
It's got the little sprinkles in it, yeah. so you know.
Uh-huh. Yeah, and then
were any of them funfetti?
Yeah. This isn't real.
Oh, that's too bad. I like funfetti.
I like funfetti anyway. It's just like
edible sugar
sprinkles.
Yeah.
Sugar and food coloring.
So you'd cut it open and
it's all just sugar and food coloring.
No, but it looks like sprinkles.
It looks like it, but it's not.
But it's in the batter, so then you cook it up.
There's a little flux of color in the cake.
Okay, I hate frosting. Like, I like the cake.
What?
Yeah, I don't like frosting.
Wow. Are you fucking kidding me?
Controversial stance.
That is controversial.
I want a gooey cake that's like not frosting. With frosting.
I like a little bit of frosting.
There needs to be the proper ratio.
Dump cake?
Yeah.
Like from a... Dump.
It's kind of like between a cake and a brownie.
I only really like frosting. Does it make sense?
Yeah.
It does kind of make sense. I just realized that now and saying it out loud. Like, I'm feeling...
I like frosting a lot.
Well, give me some of that grocery store sushi. And then I'll eat some frosting, too. I buy a little can of it and put a spoon, just put it in my mouth.
Can I get this can of frosting on my EBT?
He's just raccoon pawing it out of the can.
Oh, yeah.
Can I trade food stamps for this can of frosting?
Please?
No, you're poor. You're not supposed to be celebrating.
Oh, it's cream cheese based, huh? I do like frosting, though. Like, frosting's great. I mean, you don't want to have too much of it, but at the same time, sometimes a cake is so bad, but you're like, well, at least there was frosting.
A good frosting can make up for a bad cake, but it's hard to go the other way around.
Cream cheese frosting. I mean, I feel like the reason only people only reason people like red velvet is because it usually comes with cream cheese frosting.
Mm-hmm. Hey, no one likes red velvet. Red velvet's fucking disgusting. It's kind of fucking disgusting.
It really is.
And it makes you poop red. It's just like a vanilla fucking cupcake with red food coloring.
I don't understand why anyone likes red velvet at all.
It's red cake with a good publicist.
And it's totally
no, but like it doesn't have to be red. It can just be a regular cupcake.
But if there's a good cream cheese frosting, it's worth it to me.
Yeah, for sure. Well, cream cheese frosting.
I'm just like, take that cream cheese frosting and put it on some good like yellow cake.
Yeah. Just give it to me in like a dollop in the palm.
Right, yeah. Just put it, I'm going to open my pocket. I'm not going to ask no questions.
Just tuck it into my jacket.
When I leave here, I won't be upset if there's some cream cheese in my pocket.
And a straw.
Just in my coat pocket right here in the front.
But carrot cake.
Yeah.
I got the cream cheese frosting.
Yeah.
Again, I don't really like carrot cake, but I like the cream cheese frosting.
I'm allergic.
What?
How are you allergic to carrots?
Carrot cake usually has peanuts all up in that shit.
What the fuck kind of carrot cake are you eating?
The one that made me throw up when I was in like third grade.
It's not we're talking like Thai carrot cake from like fucking California Pizza Kitchen.
Nah, dude, like every carrot cake I've ever seen has been like, here's carrot cake, and then it's filled with nuts.
Dude, I'm
telling you about it. I'm telling you right now. That's how it's been.
All right, you guys. Matt Ufford is ready.
Nice.
I like that guy.
I hope he's ready to talk about cake.
I hope so, too.
I love that band too, though.
They're great. I like them. They're very underrated.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Too much carbon monoxide.
Hello.
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 Hi. Can you guys hear me? Okay.
Yeah. It's
coming through great.
Too good.
I tell you what. Now I hooked up a little rig with my podcasting mic. So that's if I sound clearer, it's because I'm not coming through you on you crappy laptop speakers.
Nice.
Yeah, you sound amazing.
Do you strap it around your waist like a dildo, and then it just sort of
I actually,
up to your mouth?
It sounds this good actually from inside my pants. So that's what's really impressive.
Wow, it doesn't even have to.
We're really getting the pants.
This is a pants heavy episode.
I can really hear the groin.
I feel like I'm inside your pants.
I can do something about if it's too pants heavy, I can certainly remove these.
I think it sounds great. Dedicated. I like pants a lot, so.
You got a little, your scrotum's a little basic.
Pants are pretty underrated.
Super underrated.
Yeah.
Pants?
Yeah, they do so much. Yeah.
Matt, just to bring it up to speed, we were talking about cake, and now we're talking about pants.
Cake the band or cake the thing you eat?
Both. The cake.
No.
But first, the thing you eat.
First, it was cakes, like the thing you eat, and then it became cake for a very split second.
Yeah.
I like, I'm a fan of carrot cake, but other cakes don't really do much for me.
Hey, whenever you have carrot cake, is there peanuts in it?
Ooh, no.
Yeah,
no.
Well, Matt's had some fucked up carrot cakes in his life, man.
One time I had a carrot cake and it made me throw up because there's peanuts in it, so I say all carrot cake has peanuts.
It's like he got bit by one dog and now he hates all dogs.
Well, no, I got bit by lots of dogs, and I still don't hate dogs, and I've been bit by like 10 dogs.
He kept chasing me because my pockets were full of frosting.
No, it's just something about like dogs used to just bite me. They used to just hate me and they would bite me, and so I've been bit by dogs. You guys never been bit by a dog before?
No.
Yeah.
Several times.
Yeah.
Sometimes you just get like one by the same dog like five times.
I got bit by a dachshund during the Super Bowl when Kaepernick scored on a run.
Yeah.
I jumped up and I scared the dog and it bit me.
Where?
On the upper thigh. It was very close to my nutsack.
Oh, dogs, people underrate even small dogs, but they'll break the skin, man.
Dogs hate Colin Kaepernick.
That's true. Click this link to find out why.
I want to see that ad.
These dogs hate him.
Just a stock photo of a dog baring its teeth.
Find out how you can save money on your mortgage by hating Colin Kaepernick.
Yeah, I think I used to annoy dogs as a thing. I used to, because they were so cute, you know, because dogs have a lot of patience, you know, and then eventually dogs are like, no, fuck you, and they bite your face. And one time one bit me right under the chin, a little tiny one, and that was the last time I fucked with dogs. After that, I was like, you know, I've been playing a dangerous game ever since I was little. Anyways,
you can only circle the flame for so long.
Exactly. Yeah, and then it's like not worth the burn. Not worth the burn.
So, Ufford, are you sad that football's over and there's no further games?
No, it is alive and well in my world.
I don't think that's right. Have you maybe checked any of the sporting sites on the internet to see why football ended so badly and suddenly and doesn't continue anymore.
Over is because the Patriots cheated, and as punishment, they have been sent to the bottom of the ocean, therefore making the Seahawks Super Bowl's canceled. Seahawks win their second NFL championship in 2 years. It's going to be an asterisk because they didn't have to play the Super Bowl. But sports Twitter today was on fire.
It was on fire.
That's awesome.
It was poisonous. Like, you could not go near it.
They should cancel the Super Bowl though, right? Like, because they cheated, or give it to the Colts. But you know what? Can they give it just to the Niners?
No.
They can't give it to the Niners?
Yeah, I mean,
They could.
They could just, I mean.
If they gave a prize for, like, most interceptions.
Most
losing to the Raiders-est.
Why
would you have mentioned that game?
Oh, that was hilariously below the belt.
Yeah, it was.
It was below my own belt. So
yeah, punched yourself in the dick there.
I deserved it too.
That's where you keep your mic.
So wait, what's going to happen? Does anything happen?
No. They might get Dr. Draft afterward.
Yeah. I've heard rumblings of Belichick possibly being suspended for the Super Bowl, but I think that at the end of the day, like, there will be some sort of sanity that prevails, and it's going to be a little it's retarded that there is talk of a severe penalty for this, because it didn't affect the game.
Yeah, but it's their, like, second time doing shady bullshit.
I don't know the details. I haven't looked into it too deeply. I find any discussion of how much PSI was in the balls and how many.
There's no way that much PSI could melt steel.
The balls are provided. 12 balls are provided by the home team in every game.
You're joking.
But then there's the 8K balls, the kicking balls that come straight from the factory. By the way, Brett's making the
9/11 truth or joke, but there's plenty of people who are like, actually, Avogadro's law will dictate that.
They're breaking out PV equals NRT on you.
Yeah, exactly. Well, basically, the argument is some people are saying that when it gets cold, the pressure automatically decreases, so there's no wrongdoing. Mm-hmm.
If Obama would have just come out and called it a terrorist attack right away, Marines would have been there protecting the balls.
There's simply nothing that changes the fact that the Patriots waxed the Colts by 38 points.
And mostly by running the ball.
Running the ball.
Running the deflated ball.
I find it's so stupid, and I cannot believe that it's being made into a big deal. But this is my life. This is the 2 weeks in between
this
the
is what you chose, and you are not allowed to complain.
Hey.
And Super Bowl,
it's not any better us arguing about American Sniper. So
you know what? Is it time to do that?
Not yet, but I wanted to say I'm going to propose a solution to Balghazi, which is okay. So I looked at Tom Brady and I noticed that his teeth, they're real fucking nice. He's got real nice teeth.
Beautiful.
Like, I kind of want to fuck his mouth hole.
Yeah, give him a little bit of taste of love.
So I say we make him take out a couple of his teeth, make him not so pretty no more.
Yeah.
Give him the old Tiger Woods.
Yeah.
You said we rough him up?
Yeah.
I rough him up.
Yeah.
My mom would be mad at me, though.
He's got nice hands, too. We should, like put some dirt in there.
Yeah, or, like kiss him.
Yeah, kiss him.
He got soft feet from wearing all those Uggs.
Yeah, look at your handsome hands.
As punishment to the Patriots, Tom Brady should have to make out with them.
The whole time we'd be like, gay. Gay. You like it. You like when we cuddle like this. Hold me.
Why are you cuddling yourself? Why are you cuddling yourself? Look, you're jerking yourself look at off him. Now.
He likes it when I kiss his neck. Well, nibble your ears.
I'll teach him.
Yeah, that'd be tight.
That'll show him.
Yeah, that would be cool, though. So, do you work on the radio? Did I see on the?
No, Matt, you work on the radio. You're the one. That
oh, I thought Matt worked on the radio too.
Different Matt.
Oh, okay.
I did do a radio interview in Memphis.
Oh, okay.
So there was that.
All right. For some reason,
guys. I finally got on board. I also started a podcast myself.
Nice.
Oh, no way. That makes you my competitor.
It's called The Inactives, and I do it with a guy named Nick Stevens, who I do a fantasy football show with during the season. We're having a fun time. We're two episodes deep. You can find it on SoundCloud. We're going to be on iTunes in the next week or so.
I mean, are you finding there's a steep learning curve? Because, I mean, it took us like 236 episodes to be this bad.
For me, what I hate is like just learning a new skill set, like figuring out how, like, oh, you've got to have an RSS feed, and then you've got to submit that RSS feed to iTunes, and they have to accept that.
And then
there's like this whole thing. I haven't figured out like any sort of like production values and like adding like, you know, music and like anything that might actually make it sound like a professionally created thing.
Like reggae horns.
I just did that myself.
Reggaeton horns.
Have you considered investing in a soundboard?
That's pretty cool, right?
Basically, I just resent that at my age I'm like learning a new skill set, and I'm just like, I don't like this.
Oh, so you and Brett are both fathers now.
Yes.
Yeah.
Cool.
I try not to talk about that.
My little girl
turned 3 months old a couple days ago. Nice. And she's cute, and I love her, and it's mostly awful.
3 months is where it starts to take an upswing. Things get better. After
I mean, like, it's absolutely wonderful. Like, she smiles, and, like, my entire world is brightened. And then she cries, and I regret ever having her.
Oh, yeah, that's the thing. It's like their sadness makes you sad.
It sharpens you into just like a point, like just an edge, just a continuous edge that is either going to like slice right through the first person that says anything to you on the road.
Yeah.
That's really the only option. Like somebody says like, hey, I cut you off, but I don't care. Then you just strangle him because now you're a father and you have this like anger and you're just going to.
You're dad mad.
Yeah. You're dad mad.
That sounds beautiful.
Yeah.
That really, it's touching.
I mean, like, I've been excited. I've been looking forward to the day I would become a dad for like a decade or more. I've always wanted to be a father. And, like, I approached it with enthusiasm. I'm excited about it. I really love it. And, like, even with all that, I'm like, oh, this is hard. And life without kids is so much easier. And so, if anybody's thinking, like, maybe I'll do it, you know, you really need to have a lot of resolve of being like, yeah, this is definitely for me. If you have even, like, a 5 or 10% doubt, just straight up don't have kids. Because it's life without kids is fantastic.
I'm just more looking to get somebody pregnant.
I'll tell you what, I'm kind of into the pregnant ladies. And I won't lie, like, that's a cool thing.
Is it worth it for the baby?
I mean, it depends on how freaky you are.
I guess that's a good point. Like, for me, it probably would be not worth losing the woman I love to a pit of quicksand. But it depends how horny I am at the time. Like, I've made a lot of bad decisions because there's been a cum buildup in my balls.
And everyone?
Well, yeah, but I'm like thinking, seriously, would I let someone die
in sand?
Would I let someone die in sand just for that orgasm? I think yes.
I think that's an easy yes.
Yeah. I think.
I also don't have a high value for human life.
Oh, well, yeah. That's. I was like, either that or you like quicksand as much as me. In which case, we should hang out near some. It's just every man for himself.
You gotta fill your pockets with salt or else we will start.
You missed the part where
we're going in quicksand. We gotta pack ourselves in salt so Matt Leib doesn't jerk off on us.
He's like a vampire. There are rules in which you can protect yourself from him.
Instead of garlic, it's
salt
sand.
Is the thing that keeps him from coming.
Right. it's all sediment oriented. It's either sand or salt. Sand will make him come, but salt to keep him dry.
He was raised by a vindictive geologist.
You got like
his origin story.
Either way, you got to be sprinkling something when Matt's around.
Yeah.
Just so
get away from amethyst.
You don't want to know.
It's a powerful it. Crystal.
you instead of a pocket pussy, you've got a geode.
Crystals.
I wish I knew more geology references.
Yeah.
He loves dikes.
He's looking for a mother load.
Mesa.
Oh. Mesa.
Butte.
He's got a stalactite in his pants.
Why did I think
actually, I'm sorry to correct you. It's got to be stalagmite.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Isn't that the one that's coming up? Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
I was thinking he was upside down. Like he does.
Yeah, I actually just dropped the, well, actually, Kool-Aid Man fact on you in the podcast.
Oh, yeah.
I saw a nice twist on that recently, which was the, well, actually, Kool-Aid Man, but someone had photoshopped a fedora on top of it, which I appreciated just that little touch.
M'lady.
Yeah.
M'lady.
So, speaking of being well, actually, so the first part of, I keep wanting to call it Lone Survivor, of American Sniper that I was going to ask you about. I know military people tend to have a lot of
AmeriClones or Sniper.
Yeah, I have a lot of critiques about. Before we get into the actual, I don't know, the more artistic stuff. Do you have any logistical types of complaints with this movie?
Okay, so yes, I do. Let me just throw out two caveats to start, and one is that Chris Kyle was a Navy SEAL and a sniper, and I was a Marine officer and a tank. Operator.
Is there a baby?
And so, like, the gap between what we did and his breadth of experience is it far, far exceeds mine, and I have a very different experience. So maybe there's things that snipers did that I, you know, that are different from my experience that are, you know, not applicable or I'm wrong about.
They keep their heels on the ground when they're in the prone. I know that from the movie.
Yeah, that's also not true. And I forgot what I was going to say with the other thing, but yes, there are the thing that is most jarring to me is using the satellite phone to call home
while he's sniping
targets, while he's rolling into a mission. Like, that is something that is a ridiculous / preposterous like writer add on to be like, hey, we need more tension in this scene.
Yeah.
You know, like, instead of like him just being able to talk to his wife, because like I used a satellite, like we had one satellite phone for, I think, our entire battalion. And like I got,
how
I
many
was
people
like
is
allotted,
that?
I was allotted like 5 minutes to call either my parents or my girlfriend while we were like safe and in what was called an assembly area, not like while we're like rolling out on the mission. Like,
maybe SEALs, you know, they get more phones.
I found that completely preposterous. And
why would they lie?
It actually, like, it's one of those things where I in general, I enjoyed the movie very much. Bradley Cooper's really good in it. And I also don't, like, you know, I find it kind of tired to be like the military guy, like picking apart the war movie. Like, it's just one that's like, oh, so like, oh, I'm a police officer and this cop movie isn't very accurate. You have to fill out a lot more paperwork than that when you're solving a case. And like, I don't know, like, it's, yeah, of course, like, it's been, they've taken real life and it has gone through the filter of the person who experienced it.
I'm a Godzilla, and I'll tell you, Godzillas don't do it like that.
Yeah. This is Godzilla from Fremont.
through the filter of a writer, and then the producer wants to make it, and then like the other writers they bring on to sharpen the script, and then the producers who want to do, you know, make changes X, Y, and Z to make the test audiences happy. The director that has his own tweaks, like, obviously things are going to be wrong. Like, yeah, it's not going to be a documentary. So you know, that's not what it is.
What you're saying is that the writers are the real ISIS.
Yes, exactly.
Because I can get behind that.
The writers did the real.
And so, like, there are things that, like, are, you know, wrong. And like, frankly, as a military, as a vet, what I find most troubling about American Sniper, and also we see it with Lone Survivor and with Zero Dark 30, it's this, it kind of creates this, like, hero worship that, like, you know, like, Navy SEALs just solve all our problems. And it's like the Navy SEALs are like a tiny fraction of like the people who actually get shit done for United States foreign policy on a day-to-day basis. Like there's the one scene that actually makes that really bothers me about American Sniper is that like Chris Kyle abandons his post. He has like an overwatch job and he abandons his post to go clear houses with Marine infantry. Like Marine Corps infantry is okay, not an elite force. It's not part of like spec ops, but like they're about as good as it gets. And like they don't need like an extra person who's not in their squad to help them clear rooms.
Well, like, if he's a hero, you know,
and that's great that he's like Mr. Legend and whatever. But like that was, it's one of those things where it's like, if you know, if we're using, if people are getting their fill of the military experience from movies and not from, say, meeting veterans, that's upsetting that, like, your idea is like, oh, Navy SEALs know what's going on, and everybody else is just kind of, like, hoping the Navy SEALs show up to, like, save the day yeah. for them. And that's really not the case at all.
So that part was in the book, and it always seemed really odd to me as well, because it, just from the standpoint of, like, hey, I'm just a Navy guy who's going to show up and do this. And everyone else is like, yeah, like it would almost, if you view the military as like a big corporation, which is one way to look at it, that would just like, there's so many other higher ups would be like, what the fuck is that guy doing? Yeah. You know, like
also he abandoned his post, which he probably was needed at. And like they operate as a team and they're just like, oh, also here's another guy in your mix.
I can guarantee you that like the Marine infantrymen there, like, I can't, like, maybe they were reserves who didn't, like, maybe they were, like, a reserve battalion that wasn't as sharp as, like, active duty guys. However, I can guarantee you, as someone who, I never worked, like, personally on a combat mission with Navy SEALs, but I did, like, run into them on Navy ships, and, like, there is a resentment for, like, because the Marine Corps gets by on the smallest budget, and, like, per person, the smallest per person budget in the entire Department of Defense. And like the perception is like the Navy SEALs are among the tops of that. Like they have so much money to train with and they get to do all this like high speed, low drag stuff that like is the coolest training because they have such a great budget. And the Marines like skimp. And so like when the Navy SEALs walk around like they're hot shit and actually there's like an undercurrent of resentment and like, you know, the only reason you're that good is because you have like the money and the time to do all that like train, like all you do is that. And the Marines have like all these like, you know, boxes to check. Oh, hey, we have to have our annual like sexual harassment debrief. We're not training today. We're doing 3 hours of you know, like don't rape the other people in your battalion. And
I mean,
that's fine. Like that's a good thing to do. That's an important thing to accomplish. But like, there's the 2 weeks a year that the Marines have to dedicate to being on the rifle range and qualifying as like, you know, marksmen. And like, that's like everything. I can't really put it in terms that make it easily recognizable for civilians. But like, basically like the SEALs are great because their entire job is to be total badasses, and the Marines have like such a wider scope of things that they have to cover, and they're just a larger organization with more boxes to check. So I would guess that, to make an entirely overlong story short, the whole what I suspect happened is Chris Kyle went down there and said, hey, let me help some clear houses with you guys. And his interpretation of that scene was probably like, the Marines were like, yeah, totally, we need your help. And the Marines that were actually there were probably like, who's this jagoff? Yeah. Like, okay, fine. Navy SEAL, he wants to clear. Fine, good. Yeah, he probably knows what he's doing. Sure.
But then he caught that guy right after.
Yeah. Well,
it's like he knew. It's like God told him where, like, if you do this, you're going to catch this guy. And then he got, you know, immediately got into that guy's house. So explain that.
And then that guy got killed because of him.
So the part can I jump in real quick?
Let's all
talk
at once.
This is more of a logistical issue, but so the part where he kills the bad guy, he's like, oh, he's like 2,100 yards away, and like he sees him aiming, and then it shows the bullet, and he's like, I got him. And it's like, if you're that far away, how the fuck would you know whether you got him or not?
You're gonna jump to that? That's the
It's like
the meatiest wrong in Clint's checklist of things that ruined a very good movie.
So, you know, a lot of it depends on, I think that the weapon he was probably using was a 50 cal sniper rifle, which you can hit from 2,100 meters.
No, I don't doubt that he could hit him. It's just like, I don't know if he could see it right away, right?
You also have a really powerful sight, and what you're looking for is a blood spatter. You know, the way that they portrayed it with it, you know, hitting the sheets, the sheets that were billing around it. That's actually one of the more believable scenes to me. More believable than...
He was using a Winchester 300 in that scene.
He
wasn't using a 50 cal. But still, I'm with you.
It's certainly more believable than the helicopter pilot flying along the edge of a sandstorm and delivering rounds directly onto the location where people are, like, friendlies are standing.
That was like The Mummy. I was expecting a face to come out of it.
That was, that's exactly, you know, how sandstorms happen in the Middle East. But like, I haven't seen the helicopter pilot who would fly along the edge of one. That doesn't sound realistic to me.
The only thing I didn't like about the movie, thanks for asking, you guys, is it started out with, you know, that like, Allahu Akbar.
Yeah, I believe that's called Call to Prayer.
Oh, no, I know what it is. It just seems like... Yeah,
I wanted to mock it.
I'm just saying, we're like, how many movies are going to start out with that? Yeah. It's just like, that's
how you know you're in the Middle East in a movie.
Black Hawk Down started that. I believe.
Yeah, remember I swear.
It was like the whole soundtrack was like,
I've seen at least five movies that are about the Middle East that start out with the call to prayer. And it's just like, can we just do something new, you know?
Yeah.
I understand that, like, that feels like a trope, but, like, having been to the Middle East, like, it really does happen all the goddamn time.
Oh, yeah, like five times a day.
And as a Westerner, as you know, if you don't live in a neighborhood with where that happens, like it's really haunting because like it's something that you're not used to. It's very foreign sounding, and because you associate it with hostile territory, it feels threatening. It's something that like it. Even though it's just a religious call to prayer, like there's something that feels foreboding about it.
That's why Dinesh D'Souza puts it in his Obama movies.
Is that true?
Yeah, he definitely does.
Wow.
Yeah, there's like the trailer where there's like a black family fighting over Monopoly, and all of a sudden like Arab music starts playing. Yeah. You're like, wow, subtle there, bro.
Yeah, I don't know. Like for me, I immediately was turned off. I was like, God damn it. This movie is going to be just a bunch of cliches. But being that.
I felt like it was almost really good, and all right, so I'll just lay out what I thought of the movie. To me, I thought the whole movie was basically about like, you know, I took a class in warfare, and the reason that the way you get dudes to fight in a war, it's like, you know, you can say all you want about like patriotism or the cause or whatever, but like the root, like at the ground level, the reason that dude is shooting someone else and like putting his life on the line is that he doesn't want to fuck the other guys around him. It's basically like you're creating a social group where you don't want to fuck the other people over by not being there and not doing your job. And so I thought that was like mostly the point of the movie, where he felt very much responsible for his own brother. And then, you know, his like military brothers, and to the point where like they built that into him to the point where it like took away from his family life. And I thought that was great. And I thought it was very, you know, like it didn't tell us everything about Chris Kyle, but it didn't really like turn him into like a hero necessarily. Like it said, all right, so he probably was a hero to a bunch of people who he helped not get killed, and that's totally fair.
The scene in the mechanic shop where he's a little awkward by the whole thing, where it's like, I thought that was like really well handled.
Yeah.
It's like, hey,
yeah,
I'm back
scene.
And like I got my kid, and I don't really know how to be your hero in this situation.
So then I thought the fact that it was about, you know, the idea of the brotherhood, and that's sort of the root cause of how you get guys to fight wars for you. And then at the end, it was like the twist on it was that, you know, he got killed by one of his fellow people that he's trying to help, which was like great. And then he throws in like this funeral scene where it's like, I realized that he wanted to sort of do right by that guy's family, but then it has a bunch of people like saluting a flag, and you're like, this movie wasn't really about like patriotism before this point.
Well, I think that I'm with you up to a point there, Vince. I got it as a really good character study of who Chris Kyle was and what his beliefs were, and I got the feeling that, like, awesome guy to have on your side, but also not someone with the most nuanced view of the view of the war. Like most people that I've served with, like, have a pretty, I don't know, there's kind of like two ways that you can go. You can with that, and that there's the nuanced view where, like, these are people that are that I'm working with, and they're in a horrible situation, and then like war has, like, you can either find fault with war or you can find fault with the enemy. And my experience with war was like, oh, war is a terrible machine that just like destroys lives, and it doesn't really matter whether it's American lives or Iraqi lives or Afghani lives. Like, it's just this machine that like eats people. And like, I came away from war being like, okay, like, war is the problem, not like the Iraqi people. And then like, there's other people that go to war and like think that the Iraqi people are the problem.
Well, yeah, I mean, but he was also like, part of his tours were in the later parts of like the Iraqi conflict, where I'm sure if you're walking around and these people, like, it's part of the sectarian conflict part of the Iraq debacle, where, you know, like, people are fucking taking power drills to each other, like, which was totally a real thing that they were doing. I'm not surprised that someone came away from that thing and like, geez, what a bunch of savages. Oh, yeah. Like, I would have probably fucking thought that if I was seeing that every day.
I get that they're trying to like make sure that you appreciate how fucked up things were, but I could have done without the child drill murder part.
I was like, all right,
I get what you're going for. That's a fucking tacky way to handle that. Yeah. 'Cause like, he's there and he could have saved him. And then it's just like, oh, cut to them completely forgetting about this guy they fucked.
Yeah.
To give you some more background, in the book, there's a paragraph where he says, I'm a black and white kind of guy. I don't see grays, you know, and that's kind of how he presents himself.
Right.
Yeah. And I thought
that's gotta be like, that's actually a viewpoint that makes war a lot easier. Like, if you can just see like, oh, these people are bad and these people
are good.
Well,
that was exactly what I thought when I read that. I'm like, that's like a hell of a justification, and that would certainly make it easy to kill 160 people.
And I thought that him, when he's at his buddy's funeral and his wife asks him like what he thought about his letter home, I was like, that's either a really good scene if it's like a character thing, and a really shitty scene if Clint Eastwood added that in. Like, where his buddy got shot and he's like, well, you know what killed him is that letter. He just, like, his buddy had a nuanced view and was like kind of an interesting character. He's like, hey, this is kind of fucked up.
But here, I thought that was like a good illustration of him not having a nuanced viewpoint.
Yeah. And I thought that fit in with his character. And then, like, I was like, okay, cool. If the movie doesn't turn that way, if the movie doesn't adopt that view, I feel really good about that scene.
Exactly.
And if the movie takes that view, then I feel really bad about that scene.
Yeah.
I actually thought the weakest part of the movie was the ending, because like, it was written and completed before Chris Kyle, or essentially completed before Chris Kyle got murdered. And so they had to, like, as I understand it, they had to go back into production to film like the final scene and be like, oh, by the way, here's like the final coda. And it felt so rushed and tacked on. And like, the fact that Chris Kyle was murdered by, you know, at home by a disturbed veteran is both completely unrelated to the story that they had told over the previous 2.5 hours, and yet also kind of totally intertwined with it. And because
I feel like it's almost
quite,
like, the perfect ending, really.
Well,
I mean, not in a way that it's like delivering a message, but it's like, it's very on. I mean, to me, it felt very on theme. Like, it's,
I thought you were going to say on fleek.
Here's the thing. I think that like there was room for it to be to fit into the movie, but like because they had already shot most like the entire movie,
it's almost like they should have rewritten it.
They didn't handle the scene and the end of Chris Kyle's life the way that it should have been handled for the rest of the movie. Like, I don't know who this disturbed guy was that killed him. Like, it was like, oh, here's a nice ending. Oh, P.S. Here's some lettering on the screen. Chris Kyle got murdered that day.
Well, I think it was a great opportunity to raise the profile of PTSD, which is like a big, big problem.
And a large part of the movie. Like, those scenes were shot very traumatically. Like, I had a hard time with the scenes where he's back home.
Yeah.
And he's starting to like lose control.
That was
like
the best part of the movie.
Yeah. And yeah. I think that's a really, like you're saying, that's a really good spot that they could have added a little bit.
I agree. Those are some of the better scenes in the movie. And like, you know, as we talk about, like, you know, there are veterans out there, you know, nitpicking, like, oh, this is wrong and this is wrong. And what really matters most with a movie, especially a war movie, is does it capture the feelings, does it capture the tension? And like for me, I know that I looked at that and like I was like, oh, I look back on my own life when I came back and I was like, oh, I was messed up and I didn't even realize it. Hmm. And like that's like that kind of rings true. And like the scene where he's like, he sees his baby crying in the nursery and he's like banging on the wall and like you're like, why is he so upset? What's going on with him? Like that sort of like rage at a tiny thing is something that like really is something that's very, very common for vets with like low level to high level PTSD. Like that's like where you just like get furious at like what you see as like as what might be seen as like a tiny a tiny indiscretion.
I took issue with. Sorry, did you want to go, Brett?
Yeah, I was gonna say I have never come out of a movie more unhappy. Like this was like seriously kind
you
of the
seen
whole
cake with me today.
I thought it was a really good movie, and I didn't enjoy it, but I was a little like they shot a lot of the stuff to the point where I shouldn't have gone in that open. Where I was like, oh, I feel bad about everything because of this. And, like, I wanted that to be... Like, I thought he was going to suck all the catharsis out of it from the beginning, where it's like, he's not going to give you any leeway. And it's like, look at this, look at this, look at this. And then, like, there's one scene that sort of retroactively poisoned that. Like, I wanted that. I wanted to come out feeling awful about war, awful that this is done to people, and that you know, PTSD is a thing that you need to, like... be aware of, and it's destroying. So I wanted that, and then like he fucking puts that magic bullet scene in there, and like it like poisoned my appreciation for how well done the other parts were.
You mean because he wanted to give it like a happy ending? Like
no,
it
was so tacky, and like I mean,
like he made it like that the Olympic sniper guy was the
that antagonist. they were arch rivals, and yeah. It's like, yeah, he put a fucking a shitty little subplot in there when it's like the movie's good enough without the subplot.
Right. By the way,
the worst part is like I know exactly how you could have done that scene, like kept everything except for that part and made it like super super powerful. Is that you never show the opposing sniper, you only show him the results of his sniping. You show it from his viewpoint. In the nest that he's in, and you show him shooting from the viewpoint and a splatter, and then you carry on
right.
as if like he
yeah because that's
absolutely
how you get.
No way to know
right
and he's just also, like yes I revenged my friend like
yeah I think
yeah and you know you as the audience don't know
so,
and it's like a totally different message that isn't shitty
yeah. Also to put on my well actually fedora I have the book I have it on Kindle so I'm looking at it on my phone right now. Let me contrast the book with the movie.
Mm-hmm.
This guy, Mustafa, the Olympic sniper, is the antagonist for most of the movie. They talk about him. There's this, you know, big scene where he takes him out. Let me, I'm going to, if you'll sit and get comfortable, I'm going to read to you all the parts he's in the book. Okay, ready?
It's going to be, pack it, you know, pack a lunch.
Yeah, pack a lunch. While we were on the berm watching the city, we were also watching warily for an Iraqi sniper known as Mustafa. From the reports we heard, Mustafa was an Olympics marksman who was using his skills against Americans and Iraqi police and soldiers. Several videos had been made and posted, boasting of his ability. I never saw him, but other snipers later killed an Iraqi sniper we think was him.
That's it.
Yeah, and I'm okay with him as a haunting phantom. It's like, hey, this is your counterpart doing the exact same thing on the other side. But like, don't make him into an actual character that he then kills.
Yeah.
He could have been your magic cat.
So I know, it was so close to being my magic cat, and I would have been.
There was
like,
also two sort of things that I will admit disproportionately ruined them. They shouldn't be a big deal, but they were a big deal to me. That both revolved around the sniper guy. So you first become aware of him when one of the guys in his SEAL platoon says something like, yeah, there's a sniper named Mustafa. He's uploading videos to YouTube or, you know, whatever he says. They say he was an Olympic marksman. And then, like, you see a couple scenes of him taking out guys and whatnot. And you get it's obvious, like, who the fuck else are they talking about? Yet by, like, the fourth time you see him, by the way, this fourth time you see him, someone calls him on a cell phone. He's sitting in a dark room on a couch with a phone and a sniper rifle on the coffee table.
Yeah.
It rings. He picks it up. Then he picks up the sniper rifle. Leave. Not before they show him walking out a hallway where there's a framed photo of him on the wall on an Olympic podium. Like, it's a small thing. But I was like, what? No, come on. How fucking stupid do you think we are? Also, there was this really awkward scene when he finally does take out Mustafa, where one of the guys he's with is like, you got him, Chris. Good job. That was a great shot. Like, it was like, the scene was so bizarre.
But I'm okay with that if there's never confirmation that he actually did anything. Like, he gave away their position. They're all going to get killed now. Why? And then his buddy's like, good job. And the other guys are like, fuck you.
Yeah, the other guys are like shooting for their lives. Yeah. And they're like having a moment, like smiling.
I could have dealt with
that,
where it's like
shooting each other thumbs up.
I might just edit that if I run it. I'm just like fast. I'll be like, this is the remix.
Literally a quote from the guy is like, you just fucked us, Chris.
Yeah.
Because he did in that scene, which didn't actually happen.
Yeah.
The irony is that he's taking that shot to save American lives and at the same time, like, putting his own and his teammates' lives in danger as well.
Yeah. The problem with this is like, you can kind of see whatever you want in it, and like, there's been criticism of it, and the criticism of it has mostly been bad and not really, I don't know, like, not,
yeah,
the fact that so Chris Kyle was apparently a bit of a tall teller, you know, he sort of talked about how he killed some guys trying to steal his truck, which sounded very not true, and actually
the Washington Post fact checkers couldn't find any evidence of that.
Lost a lawsuit to Jesse Ventura because he said he like punched him out for saying saying that the SEALs deserve to lose a few of them. I'm like, I'm pretty sure he didn't say that.
Yeah, I can't imagine Jesse Ventura.
But also, it's like, well, of course that's not going to go in the movie. Like, you have to get permission from the guy's family to make the movie. So you're not going to get a very critical look at Chris Kyle from that movie.
I don't,
but up until the end, I thought it was like decently fair.
I don't need it to be true. I don't need any of this to be true. I just need it to be a good movie.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, granted, there's a bunch of, like, there's obviously another conversation about the trueness of it and what does this mean, like, at a cultural level, and I'm not really interested in that. I was like, holy shit, this is a really good movie. Holy shit, what a couple of
people
dumb decisions ruining this good movie.
People be fighting about it a lot, though.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that the, first of all, as someone who, I can never be as upset about a work of art / piece of entertainment, whatever you want to call a film, or painting, or anything that is meant to entertain or be a piece of art. I just can't get that upset about. Like, it's something that, like, a lot of work went into. You know, generally talented people like put strong effort into this with the intentions of like pleasing humanity or like making something substantial or worthwhile.
I think it's the backlash to the criticism that's the loudest at this point.
Precisely. And what I get mad about is like people getting upset at that piece of art / entertainment. Like, and that's really the things that I find exhausting, because like, it's generally a very well-made movie. It's really well acted, particularly by Bradley Cooper. His main character is a hero only in certain lights, you know? Mm-hmm. Like, there is, you know, in a lot of ways, he's a realistic portrayal of a very real person in America.
I will say, in every light, he has beautiful eyes.
That is absolutely true. and also great traps. Like, he can. That's a man who can carry a pack.
He is a thickened dude. He is a he's a meaty boy.
Could definitely carry a package.
They were like, you should meet up, and he was like, okay, I'm gonna meet up, and then he was pretty big.
So here's my thing. I always complain about biopics, and for me, it's not so much the fact that they take liberties, and not so much with this movie either, but just in general, people are like, well, it's not a documentary. You're not expecting a documentary, are you? And it's like, no, I'm not expecting a documentary. What I'm expecting is, if you take a liberty, have a fucking artistic reason for it. A lot of the times, they take a liberty, and it's like to make it much worse.
Yes.
Like like the last part of Argo. It's like, I know that they didn't. Iranians are not chasing them down the fucking runway in a Jeep. So if you put that scene in, all it's going to make me do is go, well, obviously this didn't happen. And now I'm completely outside of it. And then I don't know if any of you guys saw Foxcatcher, but like Foxcatcher, they take a bunch of liberties and none of them add up to anything. Like, they don't make any sense.
It's like if you've got a really interesting story or even a facet of a really interesting story where you're like, I'm not going to tell the whole story of this guy. I'm going to tell the story of him returning home, or like the arc of him going to war and coming back, like regardless of the cultural implications, like don't trope it up. Don't be like, also he fucking saved the earth by destroying the mothership. Like, where the fuck does that come from? Yeah. Like, that doesn't fit into the part you chose to look at.
I'll tell you where it comes from.
Space.
Notes.
Oh.
Yes. Yeah, that's true.
Notes Focus from group. The studio.
I will say Selma did like an amazing job, because like at one point Martin Luther King he calls up some chick. You don't know who she is at that point, but he calls her up and he's like, I need to hear that voice, and she like sings him a gospel song like over the phone, and you're watching it, you're like, this is like the fucking cheesiest biopic moment ever.
Thanks, Aretha Franklin.
Yeah. Well, and but like a running theme throughout the movie is they're putting the FBI surveillance, the actual FBI surveillance notes on Martin Luther King. So it's like, and it has like a timestamp. So it's like midnight or like 12:30 p.m. MLK places call to Mahalia Jackson, who's like a famous gospel singer. Yeah. Well, there. So it's like, it's open source. Like, you know that there was the phone call. The song is what the movie did with the phone call. It's like this very deconstructionist way to, and it's like, it didn't take much. All she had to do was put that, make that like a running little theme with that, with like a little note in there. And it's like, wow, that's totally made that scene so much better.
Yeah. And it's not about whether it's true or not. It's that it made that scene better because it didn't pull you out by its cheesiness. It's like, well, look, that was cheesy, but like, here, actually, let me push you back into the movie.
Yeah, like I popped up and it hit me like a whack-a-mole on the ding-dong. It's like,
suspend that disbelief.
Yeah. And I was like, okay, fair.
Yeah. And that was my beef with American Sniper, other than the child drill murder, which I
but
thought
was fucking
awful.
But you
liked
Bradley Cooper's beef.
Oh, yeah, I'm a big fan. Like, I like it. I like it when the actors get all beefed up.
I like it beefy. Yeah.
I feel a little bad, like, about my respect for human life, because, like, in that scene where the little kid picks up a rocket launcher, I would have been like, oh, I would have fucking shot him right away.
Launcher. Everyone thought that. It was like, as soon as he picked it up, we're all going, just do it. Just, you know he's going to do it. And then he drops it, and you're like, oh, I'm so glad he didn't do it.
They could have put, like, one, like, good Iraqi in there just to, you know.
I thought that little kid was the one good Iraqi.
No. Yeah, that's the, the dude they were staying with had the weapons cached so they could kill him later. It's just like, that stuff is.
I did like how they didn't explain what the, I mean, I had an assumption of what the bruised elbow meant, but they didn't really explain it.
Was that?
He can do some subtlety.
Yeah, like, that was great.
You don't need to have a picture of the guy in the Olympics that you just said was in the Olympics 25 minutes ago on the wall.
Yeah, like 10 minutes later, Chris Kyle didn't have to be like, well, I saw his red elbow and that means blah, 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 blah. I'm sure that was a studio note about that.
Yeah.
I didn't even have beef with the phone.
We managed to talk about this movie for, I don't know, 20, 25 minutes without talking about the fake baby too much.
It's been.
In all honesty, I didn't notice the fake baby the first time I saw it.
Oh, I did. Mean, I turned over to, I saw it with Torio and I was like, that's a fake baby. And then he's like,
I only noticed it because I had seen it on Twitter and everybody'd be like, fake baby, fake baby. And I don't think it's that egregious. I don't think it's worthy of the Zapruder level like breakdown that it's gotten. Like,
I thought Sienna Miller's pregnancy belly was even faker looking.
Oh, you know what's bullshit about that? Whenever an actress gets pregnant in a movie, they give her like a fake belly, but they never give her like a ring underneath her
like
chin.
Like a Gone Girl, like double chin?
Yeah, they need to give like, they need one of those little water bags underneath her chin. Like, because, you know, their face gets a little bit fat.
Okay, you know what? my wife was only pregnant from in the belly. She was stayed yeah. beautiful the entire time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sure. Sure.
Yeah.
I didn't.
She's a big fan of the Frogcast.
Oh. Nicely done.
Hi, Miss Uffer.
She says hello, by the way, Vince.
Oh, hi. Yeah. I miss
she's
her.
Not, she's and not Jenny in the room
both.
Or anything like that, but she said to say hi to Vince.
Oh, and so, I mean, I miss her and Stella both. Sorry.
I had to pass it on. Yeah.
Yeah, I didn't have beef with the fake baby, and I didn't have beef with the phones either, because that one scene where he calls her while he's shooting people and things go wrong, and, like, I liked it because she's on the phone in this other world, and everyone's just, like, fucking going back and forth in the doctor's office. Like, that scene was worth the disbelief. Like, her trapped in this, like, world with him, as yeah. all these other people are just like, excuse me, stop crying in the middle of the sidewalk. Like, that was worth the fact that, like, totally wouldn't give him.
I mean, I was having IM conversations with people that were like ducking from rocket attacks in Afghanistan. So it's not like super out of the realm of possibilities, but yeah. the way they handled it was bad.
It was, but it was worth the payoff. No,
it's actually like it's a very compelling scene, and if you're not going to like, well, actually, it like it's a great scene as a movie, and like I don't know, like I just came away from the movie like. I came away with the movie with like reflections upon my own experience and who I was as like a human and as a man and as someone who's seen war. And I was just like, I enjoyed watching that movie. And that's all it is to me. I'm not involved in the fray of like, oh, was Chris Kyle a liar? And like, was he really a hero? And
won't you go fight ISIS, faggot?
And it's just like I find all that just exhausting and not worth my time.
So many tweets at Michael Moore like, why don't you go to Iraq and kill 160 people?
Yeah, yeah. I was like, I don't think you want
Michael Moore. Is like, you don't get me, do you?
I mean, I've defended Michael Moore in the past, but that tweet was just like, what are you, what the fuck is the point of this even?
Yeah.
You know what the point is.
What was the point? He was like,
the point is he's being
my dad
douche.
Said snipers are cowards. Like, okay.
He saw a movie that he interpreted completely as just American propaganda. And he's
no, because he backtracked on the tweet and was like, I liked the movie.
Oh, did he?
Yeah.
Oh, I missed that completely. So he's as just letting Seth people Rogen, know he's an
like,
asshole.
Well, actually, I like the movie.
Yeah, well, Seth Rogen was just like a joke, and for some reason, people like lumped it in.
And Seth Rogen made a very valid point. That movie did feel exactly like that yeah. movie yeah, from Inglourious Bastards. In fact, as I'm watching the movie, I'm going, "Oh, this is funny. This is like our version
it's
of that
a,
movie."
That's a totally fair critique, and that's the problem with the whole like, "Whoa, you said something like remotely like critical or questioning." There's something about an American hero, and therefore you deserve to die. You're a traitor to the country.
Right.
And it's just exhausting. It's so exhausting to fight, to have this intellectual debate with a people.
With some dork who's playing fantasy soldier or fantasy
cop. Intellectually incurious and like, and can't understand, you know, the nuance between like, hey, you know, like, I can feel one way or the other way about war, but, like, I can also recognize that maybe this aspect is bullshit or maybe this didn't happen and question why this decision was made. Like, that doesn't automatically mean that you're trying to bring down the United States of America.
Here's the thing. This is Gary from Fremont.
Hi, Gary.
This is Gary from Fremont. I read in Soldier Fortune magazine that the way the police taxes were, if he's selling cigarettes, you could choke him out. That's his fault.
Let me just stop you there. This is Gary from Fremont. Yeah. I don't think you should have to feel more than one way about a thing. I think you should feel one way about a single thing forever. And if you change, then you're a pussy and a traitor.
This is Gary from Fremont. I just say you're either with us or you're against us. Roll Tide.
Here's the thing. This is Gary from Fremont. I'm feeling more than way about a thing. I think if you want to do that, you go to France. That's what I think. This is Gary from Fremont.
Guys, we're not talking about that today on Talk 9.
Hey, this is Gary.
God damn it.
Can I give a special shout out to the our listener from the UK who emailed us as Gareth from Fremontshire?
Yeah, I like that.
That's great.
Yeah, that movie made me feel bad, real bad. It took me like a solid day to like level out emotionally. I was like, oh, all of it's bad.
But I'm with you. I thought it was like 95% good.
Yeah, I thought it was, yeah.
Couple bad decisions, but you know.
Sorry, the badness I felt was the intended consequence of the movie, plus some shit I didn't like about the stuff. Like every level bad.
Yeah.
Like there was the badness that was absolutely intended.
Also, let me say this. It's Clint Eastwood's best movie since Gran Torino by like a mile.
Yeah.
Gran Torino was an unheralded comedy.
Gran Torino.
I thought it was better than Gran Torino.
I had so much uncomfortable laughing in the theater when I saw that.
And there was
that movie.
There was a bunch of white guilt people in the theater who didn't think they were supposed to laugh. I'm like, I'm sorry, that shit is funny.
That movie had some of the worst acting I've ever seen.
It was so bad.
I think on purpose they hired people who weren't actors, right? That was like that was a point. To that or something
Here's
like that.
Here's my thing. I'm Clint Eastwood. I don't let gooks audition. I'll take the first take, just like we did back in Nam.
There's a scene with a doctor.
We stacked gook auditions five script pages high.
Anyways, we should just take out clips from that movie because it's so bad that it's incredible.
The part where he's crying in like the jail cell. Oh man.
Yeah.
We did get a question by email.
Oh,
I'm looking. Ooh. Tell us about this email.
Get a lot of emails.
Hey guys, three things. First, I'm sorry to hear that Ufford is leaving the KSK mailbag. He will be missed.
You are?
I am. I've got just two more to write. I've got one coming out the same day as this podcast, Thursday, and then I'm going to do one the Thursday after the Super Bowl, and then that's it. I've taken a. Just a friendly goodbye from the site. No hard feelings.
Think you're fucking better than us now, huh?
Yeah, yeah. Just leaving my roots behind.
What's KSK mailbag?
The Kissing Susie Colbert is a football blog that I started back in 2006 with people like Drew McGarry and Mike Tunison, aka Christmas Ape, and I'm finally leaving it after 8.5 years. So, been long enough.
Second, my alter ego, Schnitzel Bob, would very much like for Matt Lieb to return to writing for Film Drunk. Just saying.
Oh, shit.
Third.
This is Schnitzel Bob email?
Uh-huh.
Oh.
Third, my actual question. My wife's best friend recently got engaged to her longtime boyfriend. We're happy because she's happy. There's nothing wrong with her boyfriend, but they have a lengthy history of huge fights. That wind up with my wife and her friend going out.
Oh, Jesus.
That wind up with my wife and her friend.
Can't go back to
going out for long talks. They, the couple, always make up, but it's a tiresome pattern that doesn't look like it's going to change anytime soon. I feel shitty for saying this, but if I had to bet, I'd bet on divorce for them in the long run. Maybe that makes me an asshole. I don't know. Where it gets complicated is that they're planning a summer wedding in 6 months, and I know from my wife.
My wife!
Jesus.
That they're considering asking me to officiate. My province has the provision for one-off certificates. Normally, I'd be happy to, but considering how I expect the marriage to turn out, I feel weird about it. Can or should I realistically say no if they ask, or does that publicly make me a dickhead? Dang. Thanks for your advice. From
Schnitzel Bob's Canadian?
Yeah.
Oh.
That's tight.
Yeah.
I would have thought he's German.
He said province. Province.
Know, Schnitzel.
Yeah. Well, if he's going to officiate, he should throw both of them out. Hey-oh!
This wedding does not have the proper PSI.
Look, I'm just saying, Luck's got a 10-inch hand, and Brady's got a 9.8-inch hand. It's the rings.
I gotta say, like...
Different size hand.
Yeah.
I would take into consideration, there are some couples that just quarrel. Like part of like the way that they communicate is by bickering. And I don't know, it's not my style. I couldn't handle actually like fighting with my wife. I don't have that kind of energy. Like I just like talk to her like a normal person and we just have like open communication. But there are like we have friends who like their natural state, like they love each other very much, but like their natural state is like they argue. They snipe at each other and they bicker in public, and then, like, it's cool.
They couple like, of trifling-ass motherfuckers, but they do it together.
I don't know. I would measure, like, before you're like, actually, guys, I think you're probably going to get divorced. I don't know. I would just lean towards if they're in love, you know, like, try to serve them as best you can. It's not like, oh man, I've really failed as a religious minister because the one couple that I married like got divorced 10 years later. I don't know. Like,
yeah. I would say it's not really your place. It's definitely not your place to like say whether or not, like, voice whether or not, like, you think that that's a viable marriage. It's you don't know enough and all that kind of shit. If you really are that uncomfortable, you can just say like, hey, I think officiating the marriage, that's a huge responsibility.
Yeah, and, I don't want that responsibility. Look. I love you guys. I want to be there as a guest, but I don't think I can handle this responsibility. Yeah. That's totally reasonable.
Here's my thing. They're going to get enough someone to officiate it, so you might as well do it because they're going to get someone to do it, whether it's you. It's not, you know, it's going to happen. So
that's how I felt about selling heroin to my cousin.
Because someone was going to sell heroin.
I was like, someone's going to sell you heroin. It best be me. And he was like, I don't even want heroin. I was like, you're going to do this heroin.
I initially wanted a friend to officiate my wedding, and then it just turned into such a pain in the ass. And then we got a pro to do it, and we met with him once for like 20 minutes, and then he did it, and he was great. And I was like, wow, I'm glad I didn't have to like put in a bunch of work with a friend to like bring him up to speed on it. You know?
Yeah, for sure. I actually officiated one wedding. I officiated my friend Max and Lauren's wedding, and I did a really great job.
I bet you did.
Be real with you right now. It was, but it was a fuck ton of work. Like, you think it's going to be as easy as, no, like you got to go to the city clerk's office with them. You got to sign paperwork. You got to send it in for them.
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't easy. I would say remember that people, like, there's a 50% chance they're going to get divorced anyways. Divorce doesn't really mean anything that, like, the marriage is bad. They could be together for like 15 years and then get divorced. And that doesn't mean like, oh, I should have never married them. It was like, no, they just, you know, eventually they got divorced.
So I have a question.
Yeah.
This isn't in the email, but I have a legitimate thing that I need advice on. I'm trying to pick a new roommate. My roommate's moving out.
The guy who just left?
Yeah.
I was just going to say, can I just put this out here? That guy's got, and I am straight, that guy has the nicest ass I've seen on a man. Did you see his butt?
He plays hockey. It could be.
Jesus Christ. His badonk is out of this fucking world. I was looking at it like on his way to the bathroom, and I was like, I would pay to watch you take a shit. The first thing I thought. It's like, look at that ass. And I am straight. Like, I wouldn't fuck him, but I want to see it.
You can smell the seat in there. It's probably still warm.
It's not about the smell in the seat. Then
butt was on it, though.
I want to. All right, go ahead. Anyways, so your roommate's leaving.
Yeah. So now I'm like, I don't know how to pick a roommate.
Ben's coming back then, right?
It'd be great if he did, but he's not.
No, he won't. Why won't he?
Ben ain't coming back, man.
Yeah, is he in Asia or something now? What's going on?
He's going to Central America.
When?
Soon.
What do you think? Just because he survived cancer, he can travel the world now?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
It's getting a little ridiculous at this point. Let's be serious.
I mean, it's not like he had non-Hodgkin's lymphoma. What did he have? He had testicular cancer.
Yeah.
That's still.
But my question is,
he's allowed to go traveling and do whatever the fuck he wants for 10 years, in my opinion.
If I get 10 people over here and they all seem like reasonably cool and they all are like, oh, I want to move in. Like, what do you ask a person? Like, how do you know what you're getting into? What do I ask to find out whether they're not going to suck or not?
You cop, man?
Yeah. First of all, you have to tell you. Because they have to tell you or else it's entrapment. The best way to find a roommate.
Street law.
I've found is on Tinder. You go on Tinder, you meet like a nice, supple biatch. You say, hey, yo, you want to live in this room? She would be like, I got a room. And then you'd be like,
what's your room got to do with me?
Exactly.
Yeah, I got a room. Yeah. I ain't trying to hear that, see?
I will say, like, Vince, I was in an apartment that had, it had four bedrooms. So I had three roommates, and I entered into this apartment when I was found on Craigslist. I won the Craigslist sweepstakes to get into this place.
Mm-hmm.
I was with like a guy who's now like a successful indie director and like this weird German engineer guy, and like it was like a nice like two guys, two girls, like everybody was like cool sort of thing. And then like as people left, as people like, you know, paired off with like their long-term girlfriend, boyfriend, whatever, and moved out, we would interview people and we'd go with the person who seemed like the nicest roommate, who,
right,
you know, like seemed like cleanest and most considerate. And suddenly like over the course of time that I was there, like we used to have like cool get-togethers and like fun drinks and like good times in this apartment. And over time it became like as we gradually got safer and safer, the place just got lame.
Well, yeah.
It just got freaking lame. And I would say, like, just go ahead and go with the person that's most like you. Like, in a relationship, you want someone who gives you some balance. Like, you want to get married to someone who's a little bit neater than you, you know, who's, like, who provides, like, the yin to your yang. But for roommates, when you're just, you know, single bros, like, just find someone who's like you.
Yeah. I don't know. I'm leaning towards female because I've, like... In the past, I've, like, when I've lived with girls, it's been mostly good.
But then, all right, so here's what happens when you live with girls. You bring home a girl, and then she's going to be there, too, and you're going to be like, you know, I'm going to go fuck this girl. Then she's going to get all weird on you, and then...
I don't think so,
and though. Then, no, watch, because then she is going to be like... Maybe I should fuck you too, and then you're gonna fuck her too.
No, I don't think so.
And then the two
girls.
Wasn't
this the movie Threesome?
Yeah, I think this is a movie that I made. But no,
is this Wild Hogs.
You don't want to live.
Hang out in the quicksand.
If you live with girls,
part two.
You're gonna want to have sex with all the girls that move in, and that's what I say: move in with guys, because then when you want to have sex with them, you'll be like, no, I can't, because society. You get my point,
man. Matt just laid all of our cultural conventions to waste.
Yes, I did.
Here's my criteria: girls tend to care about decorating a little more, which is, I mean, I desperately need that, and they don't feel as much pressure to bro out with you.
Yeah,
and that's kind of like my personality. I'm kind of like, you know, I love being social, but I don't want to bro out because. Like there's because no one's talking.
You
don't want
to feel obligated to bro out.
Right.
You want to,
like,
bro out on your own
the
terms.
The last thing I need is a roommate who needs to fill silence by being like, "Hey man, how's it going?"
Totally.
Like, I don't
that's
fuck, like,
the
no,
fucking worst.
Stop
yeah.
that. Don't.
Vince and I lived together for a year and barely talked.
Yeah, and we were great because we would we'd IMM each other from like 20 feet away.
Yeah.
And that's how roommates should be.
That's how bloggers
I like
live.
The story. Vince told me a story once where he would be looking at something funny and start laughing, and then you'd hear Matt go, "What?"
Yeah, and then I'd send him the link, and then he'd laugh.
I wouldn't say what. I would G-chat him a question mark.
Yeah. No, that happened, like, literally every day.
Yeah.
That's great.
That was pretty much every single day.
That was kind of ideal for me. I really loved that. That was such a great relationship.
Yeah, and then we'd go to the weird Russian ladies coffee house that just opened, and it was
sucked.
Was completely.
By the way, that's been closed down since we moved.
Oh, shocking! I mean, they had such great bedside manner.
Horrible.
Yeah,
horrible.
We'd go there.
Like, no place to plug in your computer.
We'd go there and we just like work. I mean, it was empty. Like, we'd be the only two people there, and they'd be like, "Hey, do you want to like leave or something?" And we're like, "I just spent like $10 here. There's no one here. It's not like if there's people like, you know, trying to get in looking for a table. Hell yeah, I'll clear right out." But yeah,
I'm thinking of. I think me and Roxanne are looking for a place to move in together.
Whoa.
Yeah, I know. We're taking that next step. Only problem is finding like a one bedroom in San Francisco that costs about $1,200 a month.
Dude, you're going to have to move to like Tracy. For
that. I know. I feel like we could get lucky, you know.
Enjoy living in Sacramento.
Yeah.
I'll see you in the suburbs, motherfucker.
I mean, that's
we got ghosts in our townhouses.
Well, listen, okay.
That's like a far suburb, too, for $1,200.
So I pay around $730 a month for my rent, for my room.
Those aren't even numbers. Those aren't even numbers that go on a check.
So I have that. So if we get something that's like $1,500, I could afford it, most of it.
That's more of a roommate situation. You guys want to take over?
Oh, hell. You see, that's the thing. The reason we want to move in together is because we want it to be Snuggly Rock all the time.
Yeah.
And let me explain what Snuggly Rock is. You guys heard of Casterly Rock? Well, Snuggly Rock is the name of Roxanne's room. It's when we turn on the...
It's Castle Lieb.
Yeah,
Castle Lieb and Snuggly Rock.
Castle Lieb Rock. And it's when we just watch Game of Thrones and snuggle. And it's pretty much the greatest thing that's ever happened, ever. And Snuggly Rock. And we want it to be Snuggly Rock all the time.
The Lannisters do not approve.
Yeah, well, they don't need to, all right? Even though they would be the lords of Snuggly Rock.
Well, they always pay their debts.
They do. They do. And that's the problem is I couldn't pay rent. But yeah, we're looking for a place. But,
King spooning.
Yeah, King spooning. one of the reasons we're moving and the reason we would never move in here is not only because of that. She likes to walk around naked too a lot.
Wester clothes.
Which I do not like.
Winter felt each other up.
All right. The ball. What's that?
Oh no!
What's that noise?
Sorry, he's got
What's
his
going on?
Air conditioning.
Summer salad.
Continue.
It's not me.
I want to hear
my salad.
It's not just like her, Bill, because she does like to walk naked. That'd be one thing is we'd be naked all the time. But also, she lives with boys.
Okay.
She lives with boys who are
love the fact that she walks around naked.
No, she does not walk around naked in front of them. Well, she sometimes.
That's
no,
she
doesn't.
Says.
But she'll run to the bathroom sometimes naked, and it's like right across from her room door. But it's fine. Anyways, it's that she doesn't like their couch is smelly, and she wants to decorate the apartment, but they've lived together, these three boys, forever, and like she doesn't want to be the girl who's like, guys, we have to do something about this fucking tattered and torn mess. So
I told everybody coming in, I'm like, see these couches? I will fucking set these on fire if you say the word.
Yeah, that's funny because, like, yeah, she would be totally into that. She'd be like, yeah, let's set this motherfucker on fire. And then she would, you know, that's the thing. I want to move into a place with her where she can decorate and she can, like, make it a nice home. And I'm really good at taking care of someone else's home. It's my own home that I can't handle. So if I just consider it her home.
What's Papazian gonna do though without you,
dude? Papazian's been in fucking like Orange County for the last 2 months, and now he's in Australia. He met a girl, and he's done.
In Australia?
No, he met a girl in Orange County. Like,
and they went to Australia together?
No, he went to Australia with his sister. He doesn't have a job.
He met his sister?
What's that?
He met his sister?
No, he finally met his sister. He's fucking his sister. Sister Papazian.
And they're going to Snuggly Rock.
They're going to... No!
Which is in Australia. Oddly enough.
Jesus Christ. Anyways, point I'm going to move in with Roxanne. She is the best.
All right, I got to go.
She's also a Frogcast listener.
I got to go.
Oh, yeah, she is.
I got a fancy dinner to
attend. Yeah, I know. Where are you going?
I'm going to Saison. 19-course tasting menu.
What? 19 courses?
Yeah.
That's a lot of courses.
Yeah.
Dude, like 16 of those are just going to be...
Here's the thing about those courses is that most of them are half of a bite.
Yeah. No, I mean, they have to be,
like,
otherwise you
really
get all
delicious.
Full.
I would like to taste this again.
Yeah, no,
oh,
one
no,
time.
I've already had the one bite.
It's gone. You gotta live life to the moment. They called ahead of time, and they're like... Because they don't tell you the price or anything.
Yeah.
They're just like... They're like, it's going to be seafood and a little bit of Japanese. We're thinking 19. I'm like...
And a lot of money.
Yeah.
It's such bullshit. It's called a sampler platter. It's welcome to America.
I'm excited for it. I get off on high-end food shit.
Give me
even
my
though
fine
it's not
wine
cool
and a frosty mug.
I do too, but I feel like the last time I did like a big tasting menu, a lot of the courses were kind of just like...
There's gonna be a lot
like,
of uni, like they're gonna uni it up.
Yeah, there's like an uni fetish.
Yeah,
I don't like
uni.
Listen, I feel like I have a pretty... well-developed palate. I feel like I'm open-minded and I'll eat anything. And, like, uni just kind of, like, tastes gross and as weird. Like, it feels gross to me. Like, I don't dig it.
You ain't got that uni tooth.
Yeah.
No, I don't.
The last time we did a tasting menu, they gave us some weird, like, gelée that was, like... It was the exact texture of jizz and and green and not really savory and not really sweet. It was just like tasted kind of like seaweed flavored jizz.
Yeah.
And I was like, what? I mean, you would never put this on a menu unless there was, you know, like 10 courses.
You could skate by that track.
Yeah.
They really got one or two singles on that.
Right.
I like it because it's like an album. You don't have the buyer's remorse you would get at a fancy restaurant that is like traditional meal based. Like it's just like fuck it. Like some of them are gonna fail, but don't worry, there's like 100 of them.
Yeah. Hey. Yeah. Have fun.
Okay. Hey, Upper, it's always a pleasure.
Hey, likewise, buddy. Have a good one.
All right, take it easy.
Bye.
All right, so we did have one more email, and that we'll finish on that. Hopefully it's good email. I haven't fed it.
Better be good.
This one better be good, Vince.
The subject line is Butthole Stories with Matt Lieb.
Okay.
Okay.
Ooh, all right. I like where this is going.
Really caught my eye.
Actually, I read this one already. It's spectacular.
Okay, good.
Oh, all right.
Back in college, I was on the swim team, and one day after practice during my senior year, I witnessed something astounding. Only two of us remained in the showers as all my other teammates had left the locker room for a late class or for dinner. It was just me and Tom, a freshman. He was a cool guy, not the strongest swimmer, but we liked having him around. I decided to get changed and headed off to my locker. Drying off, I hear my teammate call my name. I look over to the showers, and Tom has his Speedo around his ankles. Most of us showered in our swimsuits, except for those liberated Europeans on the team. And he's pulling his butt cheeks apart. My initial thought was, very funny, asshole. Or very funny ass. He put a comma, so it's not.
Very funny asshole.
Could have been very,
very funny asshole.
Yeah, very funny asshole. But then
funny
I noticed.
Or like funny.
But then I noticed something. I took a few steps closer to get a better view. I didn't have my glasses on. And just north of his butthole was what appeared to be another butthole. Balloon knot, what have you.
What?
Tom confirmed to me what I was seeing was real.
No!
So many questions ran through my head. He said it wasn't a functioning butthole and that his friends back home would try to stick pens or pencils in it.
How did they get near?
That's my favorite part so far. I always thought that maybe he had a tail while still in the late stages in utero and that it fell or broke off, leaving him with that mark. My question for Matt. Would a female with two buttholes be the perfect woman for him?
I would be the perfect woman. And just as soon as it said female with two buttholes, I just said yes. It was kind of a reflex.
Especially if you've got like the one butthole that doesn't work as a butthole.
Yeah, I mean, if this is the
butthole that's used strictly for sex.
I mean,
that's great.
You're telling me there's a butthole out there that is just strictly a fleshlight. You know, that's what you're telling me.
You tell me you got a dark poopless butthole, a tight poopless butthole.
Like that is all I've ever wanted. But here's the thing: was it an actual butthole? I like this story is insane.
Yeah, he said he had a lot of questions. Then he says it's a mark.
He said he had a lot of questions, but I want to know what the answers to those questions are, because we have a lot of them, too.
I've got a lot of questions.
Actually, can we interview this guy? We're going to need to...
Yeah, seriously.
Let's email him back.
Yeah, get us his contact
info. Two buttholes. I would rather two buttholes, no vagina, you know? Because, like, the vagina, to me, that's the worst part of... of the woman. I'd rather a dick than a vagina. Do you guys ever think about that? But I'm talking about like a girl body. Like she still has you know, like a head and arms and legs and stuff. Yeah. Like a girl
some
body.
Nice strong shoulders.
And she still has like shoulders and stuff and elbows and all that. Like like you know, girl body, but like a
big
dick.
Biceps.
Just, you know, mangina.
Yeah, I'm down with that. Here's because, like, a dick, at least you would know what you're doing. I feel like I would kill it sucking dick. Like, I would just be like, blah, blah, blah. I feel like I could do a really good job with it. But, I mean, you know, I don't know.
Dick is definitely less complicated than a vagina.
It's so simple. Like, a vagina, you're just sucking a little dick, you know, when you're going down on it.
There is a bit of, like, with cunnilingus, there's definitely an aspect of, like, alchemy involved.
Totally. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Like, whereas, like, this is more art than science.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there's certainly no equation that can solve this. No.
Especially when they're all different. They all respond to different things.
They do. But, yeah, that's great. Two buttholes.
Yeah. I don't know what's up with the porn doing the everybody wants to. I don't really get off on people choking on dicks or like doing a lot of saliva.
I really have a problem with especially.
I hate it.
Especially as I understand like that there are young people growing up with porn. Like I at least had like a couple years of like before like streaming porn and like video porn became like a real thing that was common to see. Like I at least had like several years of like actually having sex in person. Before like that could possibly influence me.
Wait, what?
There are kids growing up with like this porn that they think that's what sex is. They think that's what sex is supposed to be. And it's like, well, I don't need I don't need anybody choking on dicks. I don't need spitting. I don't need so many of the things going on in porn.
It's like gaping buttholes.
It's just really not good sex, and I don't want to see that.
But wait a second, hold on. You had sex before you watched porn? Is that what you
correct?
Said? Well, I mean, like, this is a minority. Like, most of us saw porn first, right? I'm not crazy.
Yeah. No. I'm saying, like, before I had it, like, on hand, like, streaming on like wireless internet.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
Yeah.
I know what you mean. It's like watching.
Of course, I saw a VHS tape here and there.
I was just making sure. I was like, "That's incredible!" And
yeah, that's true. Because I mean, even in like in the year 2000, like there was internet sites where you could see like naked stuff, but it wasn't.
You had to download it on LimeWire.
Yeah.
Goddamn right.
I graduated college in 2000, and I started checking email at college on a black and green screen.
Yeah. Like,
that's how old I am.
But it's still, gross. I mean, just like porn nowadays. Here's the thing. I've been able to see some version of porn since 11th grade. Like version of online video porn. Mm-hmm. Like that's when we got our family computer with the cable internet. Mm-hmm. It was 11th grade. And that's like I went straight to the like that kind of porn. And I turned out fine.
So just quicksand and you're
just
cool.
Quicksand and heroin addiction, but like
I just remember like sizzle.com where it was like a coming through the 28.8 modem where I'd be like, okay, I can see hair, and then, okay, yeah. Now I can see face, yeah. Right, now I can see shoulders, oops, some boobs. Yeah, and then
I used to print out pictures of naked ladies and jack off directly onto them. One time, I printed out a close up of a vagina, and I just fucked the piece of paper. I was like, this is the closest I'm gonna get.
It's like a homemade reel doll.
It did not feel good, but I did like puncture the piece of printer paper with my gun.
Did you at least like have it laid down on like between couch cushions beforehand?
No, I didn't think that far ahead. Later, I think I realized like this isn't gonna work like this. I can't, you know, this is never gonna feel good.
I thought it was just gonna magically feel good.
No, I don't know. You know, I'm young and it was experimental. But there was at one point, I'm glad I didn't do this, which was like, well, if I had like a real, like a long, like a lot of pieces of paper all, and then I cut a hole into it, like when you're trying to hide a gun in a Bible. Like, yeah, I had my dick in this Bible. You know?
Could have given yourself a nasty paper cut.
I know. I'm really glad I didn't do it. There's a lot of things that I didn't do that I'm so glad I didn't do it. And then there's things that I did. Like Icy Hot, don't do that.
Oh yeah, Icy Hot always manages to make its way to your balls somehow.
Yeah, that was a mistake. I mean, straight onto my dick. No, well, that's a story for another time.
No,
here,
but you could be putting Icy Hot on like your ankle, and then somehow like something will happen, and it'll be on your ball somehow. It's just, it somehow makes it there.
Yeah,
it all leads back to.
It's called Lucas's Law.
Oh yeah, nice. I like that.
Yeah.
All right, Brendan, you wanna wrap us up?
Sure. Matt, anything you want to pump here? Matt Ufford. We usually do it to the guests in courtesy.
Come little. On.
Oh, yeah.
Come on, Matt.
That's right. I forgot.
I'm the guest here.
Yep.
I understand you're like, you know, not a regular, but kind of a regular. But,
yeah, I forgot. That's my bad.
Folks, if you could follow me on Twitter, at Matt Ufford, UFFORD, that would be a huge, huge kindness to me, and I'd appreciate that. That's how you can see all of my fun videos on YouTube about sports. I talk about football, I talk about soccer, I talk about sports I don't even like. It's fun times. And and occasionally I write too, so that'd be the best way to find me. And I'd appreciate everybody just saying hello to me on the old internets.
Oh, all right. Matt Lieb, do you have anything to pump?
No, you don't.
No, I guess I don't. I'm done. Go
besides ahead. A stack of paper.
Follow Matt Ufford at Matt Ufford. Follow me at Lieb 1234567 8 9. That's at Lieb. L-I-E as in eagle, B as in boy, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9.
Also, if you like the Frogcast, just download it like 3 times. And then just go download it on your friends' computers, too.
Yeah, go ahead and just download a lot of the Frogcast.
Go to the library and download it to where all the hobos masturbate.
Our numbers have been weird for the last month. Don't know why. I feel like there's like a couple thousand listeners who have been like, fuck December. And I don't know why. So
I'll be honest. Like I'm a little bit behind on my Frogcast listening. I listen to 2.5 to 3 out of 4 episodes, like on a month, just because I don't listen to a ton of podcasts myself. But I had a rough December. I didn't listen to a lot of Frogcasts, but I listened to Best of 2014.
Nice.
And man, I gotta say the Chinese jack off machine is really should be nominated for some kind of like radio award or maybe an Oscar. I don't know. Like that was good times.
So was it really a long December?
Yeah,
there's reason to believe. Maybe this year will be. How's the rest of
better
it?
Better than the last.
That's the only part of that song.
There's a Counting Crows Twitter that just tweets numbers.
Yeah.
Oh, okay, I get it now.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway.
All right. Well, Matt, thanks for coming on. Matt,
hey Huffer. Guys, thanks for having me. I had a ton of fun, and I gotta say, I missed you guys a little bit.
Oh, I miss you too, bud.
Aw, stop.
All right. Well, yeah. So thanks for listening once again. Email frogcast@gmail.com. Vince, what's the Google Voice number? The correct one?
415-275-0030.
All right. And thanks for listening as always. Nice out, Matt.
Thank you.
Until next week, good night and good chins.